Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. It's been nearly 1.5 years since Mirziyayev is the elected president of Uzbekistan. Throughout his time in office, we have certainly seen some movements and a lot of reform talks coming out of Tashkent. We, as a Majlis podcast, have been closely watching all of that, and I personally have certain views on how much of those reform talks have been translated into action so far. Now, it's time to discuss what has and has not changed in the media landscape of the country. To discuss this, today we join forces with Human Rights Watch, which just released its media assessment report involving Uzbekistan, and Steve Severlu, Central Asia researcher of the organization, is joining us all the way from Tashkent. Thank you, Steve.
Assalamu alaikum. Hi, everybody.
And alongside Steve from New York, I have Gulnaza Saeed, who's a journalist from Uzbekistan, currently research associate with the Committee to Protect Journalists. From Prague, my colleagues, Bruce Panier, is joining me alongside Alisher Sadiq, who is the director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service. And Bruce Panier, as you know, is the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlok Owozi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. Now, first of all, congratulations with the major report, Steve. And thank you for joining us from Tashkent. We do not often get people from field in Uzbekistan to discuss topics like this. So this is obviously a pleasant experience. So before we get into the content of your report, which is a topic of our discussion today, I know you just came back from a court hearing in Tashkent involving a journalist, which is in a way kind of strangely interesting development in two ways. First, journalist is in trial, which shouldn't be. Second, you were able to attend it, so that's also surprising. So tell us, please, what has been happening there.
Well, thanks. And I am really delighted to be joining the podcast from Tashkent, and it's good to be with all of you. I did just come out of the trial of Babamurod Abdullayev, who's an independent journalist who's on trial on very sort of complicated charges of attempting to, or being part of a conspiracy to overthrow the government, which sounds very reminiscent of many of the charges we've heard in many cases over the years. He's on trial with three other people, and another defendant in the case is also a journalist, or more specifically a blogger, named Hayot Nasreddinov. And in short, this trial is really significant. We've seen at least two of the defendants so far who have testified, we know, have been tortured, both journalists, tortured extensively and dramatically and brutally over many months. And the fact that this is being aired in open court in front of diplomatic representatives, Uzbek media such as Kun Uz and even Gazeta Uz, and human rights defenders, local human rights defenders, is really something that some people have been remarking on, that there hasn't been a trial this open since before Andijan. And people are really participating actively from the courtroom, watching and following, seeing what this court will do. One thing that is happening, though, is I think this trial is not just a trial of two journalists and two other people that are being accused of a conspiracy. It's actually really quickly turned into a trial on the SNB. And a trial, in some ways, even on President Karimov, or the late President Karimov, and also really a test case for freedom of speech, because we've heard a lot of information about how these individuals were treated in the custody of the security services, as I said, and tortured them extensively. And so to hear that information, I think, is, at least on some level for civil society, is empowering. On the other hand, this is precarious territory for these defendants, for these journalists, and they could very well end up behind bars on what we would consider to be politically motivated charges.
Thank you, Steve. Now, coming back to your report, so Uzbekistan continue to attract interests from a global audience. Speaking of media, tell us, please, what has changed and what has not changed?
That is a difficult question. In a way, it changes from day to day, because we see steps forward and we see steps back. As I was saying, we had two registered Uzbek media outlets coming to this trial, and as I've been noticing, writing daily digests about many politically sensitive issues in the trial. And, you know, as our report opens up, it one of the first points we make is that the Uzbek media landscape appears to be experiencing a lot of growth and change, more and more mobile internet users online each day who are demanding more real news than they had in the past. So there's a certain vibrancy, a certain life that we see in the Uzbek media landscape that we haven't seen before. We've seen, you know, articles about cotton, we've seen articles about corruption, we've seen a lot of new territory being covered. But at the same time, we see censorship. We spoke with lots of journalists for this report, about 22 to be exact, from state registered publications, independent publications, international publications, and they all said that, you know, the name of the report is you can't see them, but you know that they're here, which really refers to the security services, the fact that you can write about things, but you never quite know when you're crossing the line and when you're going to face a prosecution. And so in conversations with journalists, they told us that fear and self-censorship are huge factors for them. And, you know, it's with those findings that we've been addressing the government in meetings the last few days, trying to make clear our message that if you want to modernize Uzbekistan, if you want to see reforms be successful in all areas, the fundamental basis of reform is to be able to have free and open and a vibrant press. And so one of the recommendations is to do away with censorship, unblock the internet completely. And of course, as we alluded to in the beginning, there are still a number, not just this trial, but other charges that are ongoing, prosecutions that are ongoing for extremism and for other criminal statutes that have a real chilling effect on the journalistic profession. So we've been raising those cases, calling, of course, for the immediate release of journalists behind bars, but also, of course, trying to recognize the changes that have taken place.
Now, let me bring Alisher here. Alisher, my question has actually two legs. First is, if anyone feels this change, that person, I believe, should be you, with hundreds of contributors on the ground. So how has these changes affected your day-to-day operations, your ability to get news from Uzbekistan and distribute them back to the audience back home? And the second leg is, what are the points in which you agree with what Steve has said and where you disagree?
How can I disagree with my friend Steve? It's a very big, huge topic, what's going on with the Uzbek media at this point. And Steve very correctly pointed out that this is changing and it's dynamic period now. It's fluid. Like, you cannot say it's getting better or getting worse at this point. But we can say what's going on, just generally. So we know that there are a lot of websites in the UZ domain and a lot of news websites. Kunuz, Dunyauz, Kalampuruz, Azonuz, and Podrobna Gazeta. So you name them. There are a lot of them now. Khabar. So in a way, they're all equal. They're all the same. So they're trying to compete with each other in some level. And the mission of RFERL is to help them to grow and to kind of be a flagman for the standard of journalism. So we see they're fast. That's good. And they take on some issues that we bring into mediascape. So Ozotlik, Radio Free Europe, in the position to raise the topic and then start resonate in the local media. That's a very good cooperation that we see. So we broke the news about a teacher, 23-year-old teacher, who was killed while being forced to clean up streets ahead of Mirziyoyev's visit. And the woman died, tragic death. She was hit by a truck. So then, in the previous times, this would be like a kind of ignored by society, by officials, by media. And in this case, they went there. They found exactly the same evidence that we presented. They made the case. They pushed the case. And now we see some changes. Yeah, generally, I mean, they can cover issues. And I can bring so many evidence and instances of the same good cooperation. So that's the very good, I think.
Can I say one thing to Alisher's point? Just really quick, I wanted to step in, and I know we're supposed to disagree with each other, and this is a debate, but I have to, again, agree. Alisher was just talking about a case that's sort of blown up here. That's the case of the teacher who died while cleaning the road, waiting for the president to show up to Samarkand, and indeed, he's absolutely right. It's a sensational case. Everyone's discussing it. But we saw a journalist from the registered publication Gazeta Uz go and try to investigate what happened, and he all of a sudden was threatened by the local authorities. He was hounded. And then just now, just as Alisher is saying, we just got news that the prosecutor general's office offered that journalist protection from the threats that he's been receiving from local authorities, which again is, I would say, pretty unprecedented in terms of authorities in a timely manner reacting to threats against journalists. So I just wanted to step in and say, Alisher,
right. Right. But also, general prosecutor office is very notorious for their lies in the recent.
Let's bring Gulnoza here. Gulnoza, what Steve has said and what Alisher has said, generally positive developments. Is there anything you are still concerned about?
Oh, there are a lot of things we're concerned about, actually. But first of all, we have to admit that there have been positive changes in Uzbekistan since President Mirziyoyev came to power. And I would like to give you just one example. In January 2017, a month after the presidential elections in Uzbekistan, we sent a letter to President Mirziyoyev asking him to release journalists in jail. According to our research, there were five journalists detained. Four of them were in jail on various charges, and one of them was in a psychiatric clinic. In the past 14 months, all of them have been released, including two who have been held in jail longer than any other journalist in jail. They are Muhammad Bekjanov, who was released in February 2017, and then exactly a year later, Yusuf Ruzimuradov, his colleague, was also released, which is a huge news because no other journalist has spent 19 years in jail as Yusuf Ruzimuradov. Those are definitely positive changes. But the fact that in late 2017, two journalists were jailed, obviously is a very concerning development. We see this trial, we monitor this trial just as Steve is doing from Tashkent very closely, and what has been going on in the courtroom is unprecedented. But we do believe that those journalists, Babamurat Abdullayev and Hayat Nasridinov, should be released immediately. And all other allegations about torture should be investigated, and those responsible should be brought to justice. So, you know, every time we see any development, it is just one step further that we would like the Uzbek government to make.
That's right.
So I
was just going to add that I agree with Gulnoza completely there. On the list of journalists that were in prison, we had counted an additional five as well. And they have been released. And one additional fact of interest is that Mohammed Bekjanov, who Gulnoza was just speaking about, is himself monitoring the trial of Babamurat Abdullayev. He was just in the courtroom now. So it is quite amazing to see it.
Yeah. So, Bruce, you know, some positive developments, obviously, as our guest said. And then on the other hand, you also see these trials going on and journalists being threatened because of the reporting, and we are talking situation under Mirziyoyev at this time. And then as Steve's report says, that censorship and politically motivated charges being brought against them. So what do you see is happening here?
Obviously, the government is kind of, they have a line that's real indistinct. We can't see exactly where you can't go with your reporting. I saw Steve's report, the HRW report. It was, it said that journalists are still a little bit concerned about something that they write that might cross a line that they don't even know exists. Certainly the president's family and his policies are seem to still be off limits. It's kind of unfortunate. Now, that said, the officials themselves often talk about a lot of this stuff, corruption, specifically corrupt officials. So they kind of open the door for journalism in some ways by bringing up the topics themselves, and then the journalists can follow right behind that. It's going to be even in the best case scenario, it would probably be a little while before we would see anything like full independent media and uninhibited coverage of some of these things. Yeah, I can remember when I was writing about Uzbekistan in the mid-1990s, and they had interviewed someone who wouldn't give their name, but they said, you know, do you have a censor where you work? I mean, do they look at your work? And the guy, the response was that there's a censor in my head that tells me to avoid some topics. It's going to take a while after more than 20 years to get rid of that feeling among any of the journalists in Uzbekistan. There's some bold people out there who are pressing the limits and trying to see just how far they can go. Mostly what I object to is some of these cases that are, for instance, Nurulu Atahanov, who hadn't been in the country for a while and was told to come back. He's an author, and then was picked up at the airport. You know, those are the ones that are really disturbing to me, because that would seem to date back to Karimov's time, and it doesn't really have much bearing or effect on Mirziyoyev's government. I can see where the dilemma is for a lot of these people. It looks like anything that you did that Karimov disapproved of is probably fair game now to write about, and if you were jailed or encountered some kind of difficulties under Karimov, that wouldn't be a problem now, but it still is, and you don't know when it's going to pop up. You know, that's one of the most disturbing things is I feel for the people out there trying to cover stories, wondering, you know, if maybe they wrote one line too many on in this story or mentioned one name that they shouldn't have or something. So it's still, you know, Steve's out there, and of course Gulnaza and Ali Shear watch this every day, but it's got to be frustrating for some of these people to, they have the facts, they want to go with them, but they still, like I said, they still got the censor in their head.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, I would like to explore that, but continuing what Bruce, you just has said, you referred to, I believe, self-censorship. There are also things that authorities can quickly change. We were earlier talking about, I don't know whether it's official or not, but I heard from third parties about the BBC's efforts trying to get accreditation. And this process going on since the reform talks begin in Uzbekistan. And I hear from, again, third parties that they were there open some sort of green light from the Uzbek authorities. But as of today, I believe they are not where they wanted to be and frustrated. So talking about Tashkent's intention, what do they really want? Steve? Steve, are you with us? Steve is gone.
He just dropped.
Yeah. Okay. Who wants to take this question? Maybe Gulnaza?
Well, this question just shows that it would be great to have a government official in this conversation and to have them contribute and say what they want, because we can just speculate about what they want and we can, you know, go on and on. I'm not sure I know exactly what the government wants. On the one hand, they send signals that they are trying to be more modern, more open to the world, and they invite the journalists, including Daniil Kislov, the chief editor of the Moscow-based Fergana news agency, who went to Tashkent for the first time in 14 or 15 years. And that is also a great change. But on the other hand, there is still quite a tight control over media, apart from self-censorship and strong fear factor, which everybody else mentioned here. I think people just know, you know, journalists just know that they cannot go further because they are going to face repercussions if they do, especially if they report on issues not just critical for communities they live in, but also for the government. So whenever we have seen journalists taking up on some critical issues, it was most of the time after President Mirziyoyev himself criticized certain local officials or issues, raised issues and so on. So, and I agree with Bruce that it's going to take a long time. But what is interesting for me to look at and to hear from Alisher whether their websites are unblocked or I know that Voice of America Uzbek Service website has been blocked and unblocked sporadically. We at CPJ have our CPJ Eurasia Twitter account, which was blocked for quite some time after we tweeted several times at President Mirziyoyev. And then when the president appointed a new head to his press service, We noticed that last week our Twitter account was unblocked, and then I heard from VOA Uzbek service that their Twitter account was also unblocked, which I hope is a positive sign. Alisher, is your website still blocked?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's not only blocked, even our proxy service sites are getting blocked every day. So it's not like just the website. So this is active work. The mission of that particular department is still valid. Regarding other websites, for example, Voice of America, the blockage of that website was following the Andijan events, and it was generally not because of a content that they carry, but because of a deterioration of political relationship. So since it's not an issue anymore, I don't think they have even worked out the strategy. Why would we keep that block, for example? There's nothing subversive in that, in BBC Uzbek, for example. They can block it. So in that sense, I don't know what's the logic about blocking and unblocking. If we have bad political relationship, that could be one reason, or if there is something is going on there. But I think Gurnaz is right that possibly the decision is like keep them blocking because eventually we don't control them. And let's focus on the local media, give them a little bit of oxygen. But in any case, in the severe case, we can control them, use them, and ask them to carry their reports. So that's what's happening. So that's kind of a
right.
Oh, Steve, you're back. I know you are at the mercy of a hotel there in terms of your internet connection. Absence of you, Steve, we were talking about efforts by some global news organizations to come back to Uzbekistan and their frustrations and on what really the authorities have in mind about them. If you want to say something on that, feel free to comment. And also, I had a question about your own effort. I know your organization is obviously not a media group, but also not very far in terms of your objectives when it comes to emphasize on media freedom. How far you are from achieving your objectives? It's good that you are in Tashkent, but is it the only thing you are looking for there?
Right. No, I mean, and I would start by saying in terms of international media, BBC has still not received accreditation for their correspondent, and we did raise that issue with the government. We think that was supposed to happen relatively quickly, and one would logically then think that Radio Free Europe, Voice of America, Deutsche Welle would be able to come back. And, you know, as Alisher said, this is something that could be done relatively easily. You know, the only logical conclusion is that I think there's a struggle going on within the government about whether or not they should, you know, lift those controls. And essentially, it's a new situation for authorities to have to deal with a real media. And they're certainly not used to it yet. And that came through to us very clearly about 2 days ago. Human Rights Watch had a meeting with the Uzbek Agency for Print and Information, UZAPI. And when we raised the issue of censorship and self-censorship, the response in that meeting was, there's no censorship. There's no censorship anymore. Times have completely changed, which obviously is a drastic oversimplification of the current reality. And we have heard that in several of the government meetings, that in some essence, there's a sort of new credo, which is everything bad you want to say about our human rights record or our media freedom record, that all relates to the Karima period. Everything in the last year and a half, it's all clean. It's all good. And of course, you know, we've been pushing back on that and saying, you know, that's contradicted by the case of Abdullayev and many of these other issues. So, you know, we also met with the National Association for Electronic Media, and they were, you know, raving about the cable channels that have now gotten into the digital age in Uzbekistan and what that does for media. And of course, again, that's all true. But I think there's this general reluctance to look at the painful truth that censorship and repression really still are quite pervasive. In terms of our efforts, we're just like you guys in the sense that our website, we just checked an hour ago, was blocked today. But it was working, I think, yesterday. So we're seeing it happening in fits and starts. And our legal status for Human Rights Watch, and we know that, you know, Freedom House and other organizations have been banned by a Supreme Court decision that affected us in 2010. And, you know, that legacy, they have to find remedies to deal with this. And it's not clear to a lot of, I think, elements of the government how exactly they will overturn court decisions or create new avenues for registration of NGOs. These issues are totally connected in terms of civil society and journalism. And I think they need to start by, you know, these conferences that we saw this week, the Afghanistan conference, we saw the BBC present, we saw a lot of international reporters coming in for a few days, but that's not enough. They have to bring it to the next level, which is, in fact, there's going to be a media law, I'm told, entering into force in about 10 days. And it's telling that none of us on this panel have really mentioned it yet. I think that's because for such a long period of time, laws in Uzbekistan have sort of been of, you know, less than actual relevance in many cases. Huh. But there may be this opportunity to really change things, but it's going to require, I think, significant pressure from all the traditional actors, not just the US and the EU, but also the World Bank, the European Bank of Reconstruction and Development, to say, hey, this is something you have to do now.
I remember, actually, we were talking about this, Steve, when you were in Washington, D.C., that Turkmenistan also had a media law, a very nice one, when Berdimuhamedov came into power. That was drafted with the OSCE's experts together, but, you know, what happened with that media law in Turkmenistan. And let's see where this law goes in case if it, you know, comes into effect. Now, let's talk about some of the good news. Though there is no good news, you know, for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Voice of America, and BBC, we just mentioned, or many other organizations. As I said earlier, that the fact that Steve is joining us from Uzbekistan is, you know, something new, something refreshing. And also new is the ability of some local journalists to cover previously untouchable topics. So what are they? How the process of this transition looks like and how it looks like in the newsroom? Also, what are the limits of the local journalists? We will continue discussion talking about these and many other questions shortly. But first, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are discussing media landscape in Mirziyayev's Uzbekistan, some changing and not changing practices. Joining me in the discussion are Steve Severlu, Human Rights Watch's Central Asia researcher in Tashkent, Gulnaza Said, CPG's Central Asia Research Associate in New York City, Alisher Siddiq, Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek Service, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, colleagues. Let's continue, Steve, with you. Actually, let me try this. Besides your presence in Uzbekistan, Steve, which is obviously a good news, the local journalists are also pushing boundaries of their freedom, as we were talking in the first half of the discussion. And your report certainly discusses some of these issues. So tell us, please, what kind of topics are they covering and how it is different compared to a couple of years ago?
Well, we've seen Kun Uz, which has probably made its name as maybe the most courageous of among that group that Ali Sher mentioned, Kalamter Uz, Sof Uz, Dario Uz, Anhor Uz. But Kun Uz in particular put some really what became viral videos on their pages during the cotton harvest. And in some ways, again, we have to say they were emulating, I think, the model of Ozodlik and Voice of America by reporting more frequently about the cotton harvest. In fact, there was earlier no reporting in Uzbekistan, but this cotton harvest really did see Hakims getting caught berating their subordinates, yelling at people, saying, go out and pick that cotton, meet the quota, cussing, using colorful language. And this really humiliated these public officials and led to viral discussions on Facebook that were really important. We also saw, I should mention one other case, the case of Jasur Ibrahimov, who was a medical student at Tashkent Medical College. He was killed by allegedly other students who apparently bragged about the fact that they would never be taken in, they would never face justice for what they did. And when Jasur Ibrahimov's mother appealed to authorities for justice, you saw this grassroots gathering of people, of journalists, including Kun Uz and others, that were actually led to the first peaceful demonstrations, if you could call them. They were a little bit more modest than demonstrations, but groupings of people in Park Babur in Tashkent in June of last year. But sadly, again, we saw a lot of the same things happen. Two of the organizers of those peaceful meetings were charged with administrative violations and spent 10 and 15 days in jail. So again, you have both sides of the same coin.
Alisher, looking into this development from abroad, what do you see? What kind of topics the local journalists are deliberately avoiding to cover?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think there's the topics that they're covering is like the range is widening. It's good, but at the same time, it's narrowing on certain points. For example, religious issues. It turned out that religion is becoming kind of a more freedom it's given, and it's received in a little hasty way. Yeah. So, for example, you have sites like Azon Uz, that carries very interesting topics and very controversial religious and in some way radical opinions, and that is okay, that's allowed. So nobody's challenging these things, and the same is happening with other websites. Their ability to stay secular and to be balanced, it's a problem, it's an issue. So another issue they cover, yes, a lot of thing without giving it critical thought. So okay, government adopted this thing, and that will be just like that. Like what government adopted, that's correct, that's fine, there's nothing bad with this. So there's no critical approach, no analysis into whether it's correct, whether it's not correct, in what form it will be. It's, of course, for sure, they will never challenge president. That's the banned topic. They will be stay banned. President, top Uzbek officials, they are protected from any criticism as they would be in Karimov's time. There's no critics on that whatsoever. Yes, and we should not, let's say, view the openness in the media when they start criticizing previous or those who were considered as enemies of Mirziyoyev. Yeah, so now it is only lazy people are not criticizing Gulnara Karimova or Shuhrat Ghulamov, you know, this. Where were you all these years? So that's like a main question,
And also, so, Alisher, just to give some credit to the authorities, now they came even to this stage from a very repressive environment. I kind of wondered how...
No, let me, again, this is, again, Karimov, in the first year of Karimov's... I always say during our majlis, let's look in the historical perspective where Karimov was and where is Mirziyoyev. Karimov in his best times, Karimov was with all this media accredited, with Human Rights Watch accredited, with everybody on board and writing about anything. That where Karimov was at some point of his career.
In his early days.
And Mirziyoyev is not stepping there, is very cautious and never speak anything about freedom of speech, never mentioned that as something he would want to change or do about something. That is a big question, whether he will ever get to the point where Karimov were at some point in his career. That's where we should push him. So that's where we're not there. Yeah, so we're very far away from that point. Karimov never had political prisoners in his first year, second, three. You know, he had to spend 8 years in power after first political prisoner appears.
Steve, you want to respond to this?
Yeah, I agree with what Alisher is saying. Mostly, I would just say that I have to correct the point about political prisoners. I think that Karimov, I think the very DNA of his governance from the beginning was going after the secular opposition, which was the first sort of line of people to be targeted. And so we saw, you know, Samandar Kukanov in prison as early as 1993, 1992, Murad Jurayev, 1994. So it was quite early in Karimov's rule that he started to just dismantle all forms of the opposition. But I agree with Alisher's general point that Mirziyoyev he's in a good place, because again, Karimov lowered the bar so low for what would be considered progress that, again, we all have to be careful not to be too enthusiastic about what we're seeing, because we don't want to be cheerleading
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Karimov had to deal with his foes, right? Political foes. And at that time, his foes were opposition. And Mirziyoyev also is dealing with his foes. But since there were no opposition, all the enemies are internal inside the government. And what he did, he put them in jail. Can we consider them political prisoners? I don't know. They're corrupt? Yes. They are possibly criminals, very narco dealers, whatever you can call them. Yes, they are. But he's in a comfortable position. Nobody will rally and ask for their release, and everybody will be just happy that they're in the prison, right? Yeah. So basically, the modus operandi is there. You come to power, you destroy your enemies.
I have to make one point in response real quick, Mohammed, to that, which is that I think Alisher is right to be cynical and realistic about this. I do want to say, yes, we can't really get in the mind of any politician to know if Mirziyoyev is deeply committed to reforms or simply, you know, replacing the people around him with the people that were internal opponents. But one thing I can say from the perspective of Human Rights Watch is that here this week and earlier, we are making clear to the government that we believe that, again, if reforms are to be successful, it's not enough simply to free people from prison and you know, stop censoring people. There will need to be a reckoning with the past abuses as well. So these arrests that we see, some of these speeches that Mirziyoyev has given about the SNB, he seems to be treading on this territory, getting quite close to actually talking about ending impunity for torture. And if that's really the case, if he's putting in jail some of these SNB generals and other officials for torture, well, then prove it. What we've asked this week in all of our government meetings is for the government to consider opening up the SNB, or now, I'm sorry, the SGB, opening up their file. Let citizens come in and see how they were surveilled. Let citizens talk about who tortured them, how they were tortured. Hold public hearings. Have a national commission on this issue so that we don't return, so that we don't have, you know, what some of people are talking about, this sort of Karimov number two, or there's a way of looking like Karimov did in the early 90s. We want that to end. So we're calling on the government to actually pursue accountability for past abuses as well. You can't just forget what happened to Karimov and just hope that you're going to build some new system without dealing with 27 years of repression.
Yeah, it's a fascinating discussion, Alisher and Steve, but I was just trying to bring back the discussion to media. So Gulnaz and Bruce has been kind of quiet. Whoever wants to take this question, feel free. I just kind of wondered how this, the process of this transition from repressive media environment to somewhat of opening environment is taking place in the newsrooms of Uzbekistan, as to how they choose the topic, what to write and what to avoid. Is it a natural process or top-down approach? How do you think this is taking place?
I believe local journalists in Uzbekistan have a long way to go. After all, they've been banned from covering huge number of issues for more than two decades. So, and as Steve said, every journalist has to try for himself or herself where the red line is, because there are no instructions, quote unquote, what they can cover and what they cannot cover. So they're trying. At the same time, the younger journalists, we hear that they've been exploring new ways of bringing the information to the audiences, because traditional media, conventional media don't work as they used to be 30 years ago, including in Uzbekistan, although the internet is not as fast as in some other societies. But still, we see that a lot of people receive information through phone apps. I know that Ozatlik is hugely popular on Telegram, for example. So, as I said, there is a long way to go for them. But what I would like to see is that the Uzbek government makes a very, very important symbolic step, symbolic meaning that they send strong signal to the world community. And one step is to stop blocking the websites. The other step is to give accreditation to BBC, to Voice of America, to RFRL Uzbek service. That would mean a lot for everyone, including foreign investors. And as Steve said at some point, and also Human Rights Watch report mentions it at the very end when they give recommendations, is that foreign governments and foreign institutions, whenever they have negotiations with the Uzbek government, should insist on media freedom and respect for human rights and freedom of speech, along with other, say, economic freedoms. So that's very important.
Also, Bruce, if you can jump in here, giving accreditation to some of the global media organization, obviously it makes perfect sense if they are genuinely trying to open up the country. But talking about the unclear red lines for local journalists, is there anything that Mirziyoyev could do to clarify this?
Well, he should be encouraging as much investigative journalism as possible, I suppose, and holding up some journalists as models when they get to, you know, if you're investigating corruption, huh. and it ends up helping, because we know corruption is a huge problem. If you're going to give someone a little bit more free rein to get to the bottom of some of these things and uncover the roots of corruption in some aspect of the government or some business organization, you know, then that sets the model. It would help to clean up the whole mess that's out there to begin with. But he's got to give the signal that this is okay. He's not going to oppose this kind of investigative journalism. You know, part of the problem is going to be, you know, he was prime minister for 13 years under Karimov, too. And I think this is one of the troubling aspects for the Uzbek government about freeing up journalism too much. Is it's not even so much that they'll get some of the new appointees or something like that, but some of the trails that journalists will follow will take them to places that run very close to Mirziyoyev in his past. And this is going to be something that, of course, the Uzbek authorities and Mirziyoyev himself are going to be very cautious about.
Yeah. You know, it's a really...
Let me, very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so very quickly, because we started with the trial of Bobo Murat Abdullayev.
Yeah.
I wanted to finish probably my part with him. I think the trial is actually represents the lack of freedom of media, the consequence of lacking of media, free media. In a way that Bobo Murat Abdullayev's Khaknazarov nickname came out and out of the nowhere, you can disagree with a lot of articles. You can say they're fake news. You can say they're subversive or wrong in many cases. But that's what happens when you don't have free media. So I think they should look into this case as an example, how they will end up. They will end up with a lot of anonymous journalists or bloggers writing whatever they want or whatever they have information on, and that will be even more problematic. So more you're opening, more kind of there is room for normal journalism, yeah, not for this underground type of journalism. So I think this is a very strong defense point for Bobo Murat to say that I wrote these type of articles in this manner because there were no other way to write things.
Obviously, the trial, as we said, is a huge problematic question. The allegation against the journalist and his colleagues, they just doesn't make sense. But the fact that people like Steve were able to attend the trial is a step forward of some sort. Now, reaching to the final aspect of our discussion, now, Gulnaza, how much of a change is this so far, what we have discussed? And also, what you imagine the ranking of Uzbekistan would be in your forthcoming report? I think we know its traditional place has been, I believe, third or fourth from the bottom, I guess. Is it changing?
Well, if you compare Uzbekistan to other countries of the region, in Central Asia, Uzbekistan has been the second worst after Turkmenistan for many years in terms of media freedom. And lately, it's been changing partly because of the situation in Uzbekistan and also, unfortunately, because of some negative trends in other countries, namely Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan. So by the end of this year, we don't do rankings. You know, we issue different reports, including the report on jailed journalists. So at the end of last year, there were 5 jailed journalists in Uzbekistan, which is a lot, which is more than in any other Central Asian country, including Turkmenistan. But we hope that by the end of this year, we will see zero in terms of jailed journalists. And we will be able to say that there is much more freedom of media and freedom of speech in Uzbekistan, and that journalists can practice journalism without any fear of repercussion. That is definitely what we would like to see.
Okay, thank you, Gulnaz. As much as, you know, it's a fascinating discussion, we are way out of time. Let's quickly conclude it. Before doing so, let me say a couple of words here. You know, I always listen, not speak, but I want to make exception today, given the topic is near and dear to me in my day-to-day work. So given that the Uzbek authorities are not forthcoming to let representatives of foreign media to come, as much as the minor changes are welcoming, I I'm cautious that the changes we have seen so far is easily reversible. You can see plenty of such examples in neighboring countries, Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. Also, at the time when we are talking about an improving media landscape in Uzbekistan, news sites shouldn't remain blocked. Internet should be free. Journalists like Abdullayev shouldn't be on trial for ridiculous charges like alleged attempt to overthrow the government as he is today. Squeezing family members of Uzbek journalists abroad should stop also. In this case, let me remind the case of my colleague Faruk Yusupov's brother, who's in jail for alleged drug-related charges. It just doesn't make sense. So what I'm trying to say is, at the time of reform discussion, we shouldn't be talking about cases like these. It just doesn't sound really promising. But I agree, there are some signs of progress. So with this very cautious but still optimistic note, let me end the discussion with your brief points. I want to you tell me, beyond the talks only, what are some of the points, Steve, you will be looking at to make your mind on where this administration is headed in terms of media freedom going forward?
Thanks, Mohammed. I want to say that Aziz Yusupov, the brother of the Radio Free Europe correspondent, his case is definitely on Human Rights Watch's radar, and we've been talking about it in addition to other cases that we've been raising. I think you're absolutely right to demand a minimum standard of human dignity that be respected of journalists and in general. So what we'll be looking for over the next few months, well, obviously, as Gulnoza said, we want to see Abdullayev and Nasreddinov free. Nurullah Atakhanov should have the case closed against him. These are real test cases. And I think what we've been saying overall is that the president needs to very clearly say every chance he gets that criticism is welcome. Criticism is needed. Criticism is important for any sort of reform process to be successful. We are going to watch the BBC accreditation. We're going to push the unblocking of websites and a simplification of accreditation. One thing we didn't mention is reporters still, when they get accreditation from the MFA, they still can't go to other press conferences run by other government agencies, such as the Interior Ministry. So that all needs to be simplified. And we're also looking to the international community to not be too enthusiastic and to remain principled in the way they engage and push for concrete, specific human rights improvements.
Okay. Gulnoza, beyond the talks of reform, so what are some of the points you will be looking at to determine where this administration is headed in terms of media freedom going forward? And also, what are the time frame you are prepared to give the authorities to make your judgment?
Well, the last point is very good because usually there is a maybe not in, you know, nobody says openly what time they give, but usually there is certain period when not only organizations like ours, but foreign governments also give to a government like Uzbekistan, trying to see whether it is genuine in its intention to conduct democratic reforms. So right now, there is not much criticism as before towards the government of President Mirziyoyev, simply because there is this grace period, so-called, you know? But at some point, everybody, including CPJ, would like to see, as I said, very concrete results. And we would like to start with the release of two journalists. We would like the government to start with the release of Babamurat Abdullayev and Hayat Nasreddinov. And then, as I said, unblock the websites, engage more in communication with local and foreign journalists, not just by inviting them to some ad hoc events like the Afghanistan peace talks, but also allow them to cover Uzbekistan from within without conducting surveillance of those foreign correspondents. And I know that's been the case, including these days in Tashkent. And also allow accreditation of media outlets that have been waiting for the accreditation, as well as those who may apply, and just send a strong signal that free media is part of the democratic society. And the more free the media are, the more issues the journalists can cover, the better it is for the entire society.
Okay, the same question to you, Alisher, and later Bruce. So your points on what kind of milestones you are looking at going forward to determine where this administration is going ahead with media freedom, and also the time frame you expect them to act on this?
Regarding accreditation, with the current technology, I'm afraid by the time they want to give us accreditation, we would no longer need accreditation because we know everything. I mean, we see everything. We have everything. You know, if you can send a drone to the workplace, why would you need to send soldiers to die? You know, it's like in a military term. So accreditation, more or less these days, become that something that they need to give us, you know, to be able to control something. Yeah. So that's maybe my own opinion on the accreditation issue.
So you think these are the fault lines? So to be able that they correct this and move ahead with media freedom according to the laws. So what are the milestones that you will be looking at to determine that they are on the right path?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
You know, that would be an advice to the government, and I don't want to do it for free.
Okay. Bruce, would like to give a free advice?
I'm not going to set any timeline for, mm-hmm. you know, when I would like to see free media. We've got more than 25 years of damage to undo here. It's going to take a while. I'm willing to concede that. What I would like to see, what would show me that media was headed in the right direction, local media in Uzbekistan, would be if they would start digging a little deeper into some of the issues which the government is letting loose itself. Steve spoke earlier about reconciliation with the past. So when Mirziyoyev comes out and says, criticizes DSN Bey for torturing people and throwing people in jail for no good reason, the media reports that and that's where it ends. And there are literally thousands of people they could interview and find that would describe exactly what that was like for them. Now, a lot of people have a vague idea of that, and then they're afraid of the SNB. And I know a lot of people probably going to be afraid to speak about that or something. But, you know, the government throws this out or you know, brand someone as a former crook or something from the Karimov regime. And that's where the story ends as far as the media goes. They're willing to report, yep, okay, he's a bad guy. We all knew he was a bad guy, and now he's going to jail. But they don't dig a little bit deeper to expose exactly how bad this was. And even the trial of Bobomurod Abdullayev is a good example, too. He claimed he was tortured. And so all we got Gazeta Daruz and Kun Daruz and stuff reporting. He says he was tortured, and they're going to adjourn so that he can be examined. But they don't describe very much about what he claims happened to them. The HRW report that was just released goes into detail about what he said happened to him when he was in jail. But the local media doesn't really get into that. And then when the medical report comes back and says he wasn't tortured, then they just report that that's it without questioning the fact of, you know, how did they determine that he wasn't tortured? So I would really, for me, it'll make a big difference when they start getting to people and asking these questions, you know, explain to me what happened to you personally. You know, let's expose just how bad it was, you know, and talk to several people about this so that everyone, it would help everyone if they could. They would feel better if they would know that they were free to speak about this, that all that suffering that was pent up for years can be released a little bit and that they can move forward. But like I said, we're not at that level yet. You know, everyone waits for the government to queue up. This guy was a bad guy. This group was a bad group. And everyone reports just that without following up and going a little bit further and finding people who can explain what just how bad it was under this person.
Okay, great stuff. Thank you very much, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, Blok, Shlok, Owozi. And also big thanks to Steve Serdlo, Human Rights Watch's Central Asia researcher today in Tashkent, and also Gulnaz Said, Committee to Protect Journalists Central Asia Research Associate, and Alisher Siddiq, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service. Thank you, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Very nice to have you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.